Full Story is supported by Telstra. Big ambitions need the right partner, and that's where Telstra comes in. Telstra works with enterprise and government organisations across Australia to help them build, connect, and grow at scale. They support real outcomes, from secure business growth to connecting schools to networks that help keep communities safe. Telstra is a long-term partner for organisations with complex needs and big plans. Together builds better, wherever they go. For enterprise-sized solutions, partner with Telstra.
This is The Guardian.
Hi, it's Noor Haider here. Today we're bringing you the first episode of a new investigative series by The Guardian called Off Duty, on the gaping cracks in Chicago's criminal legal system and a 12-year hunt for justice. Okay, here's senior US investigative reporter and host Melissa Segura.
On the evening of December 29th, 2011, Clifton Lewis showed up for his shift at the M&M Mini Mart on Chicago's west side. He worked days as an officer in the Chicago Police Department, but was moonlighting as a security guard to pick up a little extra cash. He was chit-chatting behind the counter with the store owner and a clerk around 8:30 p.m. when two men walked into the M&M.
They shot Lewis several times, then took off with his gun and police star.
Seconds after the gunmen left, a bystander called 911. Lewis was rushed to the hospital.
More than 200 police officers gathered in the parking lot of Strozier Hospital where Lewis was pronounced dead.
He had been on the force for 8 years, a black officer who lived in the neighborhood he served, and he'd gotten engaged 4 days earlier, on Christmas morning. Police launched a massive manhunt for Lewis's killer. The brass ordered that police work only this case until it was solved. Tips poured in, and many pointed to the Four Corner Hustlers, the gang that controlled the area around the mini mart. A week later, police had their suspects, but they weren't hustlers. They were four men affiliated with a gang called the Spanish Cobras. For hours, under intense police questioning, they said they didn't do it. But that didn't seem to matter. The Chicago Police Department decided these were the guys responsible for the brutal murder of Officer Clifton Lewis. In the years that follow, confessions would be made and recanted, evidence missing and exposed. The case against three of the men will fall apart, but one, Alexander Villa, would remain behind bars in a system that seemed determined to keep him there at all costs. From The Guardian, I'm Melissa Segura. This is Off Duty, Episode 1, The Crime. I first heard the name Alex Villa in 2019. I'd been reporting on a series of wrongful convictions in Chicago, and his sister wrote me shortly after he'd been convicted of killing Officer Lewis. But my editor at the time wasn't interested in another wrongful conviction story. Heard one, heard them all. Except, I couldn't let it go. It tugged at my brain, and eventually, I realized why. It's because we tend to think that a great injustice requires some grand plan or some comic book villain. But what happens when that's not the story at all? When instead, every single part of the criminal legal system, police officers, their supervisors, forensics, prosecutors, did not do its job. When people with power refused to admit that they could be wrong and doubled down again and again. When the pursuit of truth takes a backseat to what they really might think of as the pursuit of justice. Institutions are supposed to have safeguards to make sure that doesn't happen. This is the story of what happens when they fail. Those decisions ripple out. They reinforce each other and magnify. And only when you look back at them from the perspective of years can you see how much destruction they've caused. Alex Villa was tried for the murder of Clifton Lewis in February 2019, more than 7 years after Lewis was killed. From the beginning, Alex swore he didn't do it. He never changed his story in the years that followed.
I thought my brother had the case beat the whole time. Like, my brother could have done many things. He's definitely not no angel, but he definitely wouldn't do that. I would bet everything that I have on that.
That's Alex's older brother, Stephen. They grew up in Chicago, in a big Puerto Rican family, who all showed up for Alex's trial. Stephen, Alex's two older sisters, his young daughter and son, his mother, and his elderly grandmother. The trial was a massive event, especially for the Chicago Police Department. One of their own had been killed, and they had finally gotten their man. For 4 days, Alex's family arrived to a wall of Chicago police officers staring them down.
The whole front of Cook County Jail would be lined up with police cars, the whole front, in the middle of the street, every court day.
Once they got inside, the tension was even worse. It was like Officer Lewis had been killed yesterday.
Like, there was 100 cops in the courtroom, not letting my 80-year-old grandma sit down at court. It was just, it was crazy. It was almost like Gotham City, like you had the Joker on trial here.
In the courtroom, the prosecution laid out their case. They showed surveillance footage from the night of the murder, a man jumping over the counter at the mini mart, pointing his gun, and firing at Clifton Lewis. That man was Alex, they said. They had a confession from one of Alex's alleged accomplices and statements from three people who said Alex told him he's the one who committed the murder. Alex's sister Marisol told me the whole time she felt like the fix was in. She said it felt like prosecutors would openly taunt Alex in the courtroom.
Looking at their body language, right? Like, even the prosecutors, like, ha ha ha, you're going away, you know?
After 4 days of testimony, the jury reached a verdict in under 4 hours. Guilty. Marisol caught Alex's eye as he was led away in handcuffs.
I specifically looked at Alex and was telling him, don't worry, you're going to come out of this, you know, like, and he just had like this blank face. And then I was looking at the rest of my family. You know, his daughter was there, his son, like my other brother, Stephen, he like fell to the floor and started crying in the middle of court. Loudly was like, he didn't do this. He didn't do this.
They escorted me out like 8 county sheriffs. I was just all over the place.
The sentence would come later, but Alex's siblings knew that being convicted of killing a cop meant their brother was spending the rest of his life in prison. He was 30 years old and he was never coming home.
My mom has heart failure. His daughters are getting big. My grandma's getting older. There's a possibility that he's going to lose people that he loves all his life, and he's not even going to be there to see it. And he's sitting in jail for something he didn't do.
Marisol knew better than to wallow or to wait. She worked as a probation officer in the same courthouse where Alex was tried. And so she knew the first thing they'd need for an appeal was a copy of the trial transcripts. Even before they left the courtroom, she put her sister Melissa to work.
She's like, make sure you call the court reporter's office and request the trial transcripts because things mysteriously disappear, and especially a high profile case like this.
Melissa did something else right after Alex was convicted. She reached out to me. Like I said, I couldn't write about the case at the time. But years later, I found out the case was still moving through the courts. So I reached out to Melissa. And then I went to visit her and Marisol in the home they share, in the Hermosa neighborhood where they grew up. Alex is the youngest, 6 years younger than Marisol and 4 years behind Melissa.
He's always been, you know, the baby of the house and grandma's favorite. And I say he was the favorite one jokingly, but he's truly loved since he was very little.
My mom was so protective of him. Like, he was, her world is her world.
Their parents split up when they were kids, and they all moved with their mom to the city's northwest side. There were 8 or so gangs fighting for turf back then in Hermosa and neighboring Humboldt Park. Gunfire was often the soundtrack of their neighborhood.
There was even a time I was like sitting outside the front steps of my home, and there was a drive-by happening, and I had to hide underneath the stairs and like duck there with my friends.
The girls hid from the violence. Melissa poured herself into motherhood after getting pregnant at 15. Marisol escaped into school, getting herself into college, then a master's degree in social work. It was different for boys, Stephen told me. You were either in a gang or you were its target. He joined the Spanish Cobras when he was in middle school.
Our father was in a gang. Our uncles were in gangs. So it wasn't that we were trying to be in gangs. It's almost like it's second nature to kind of be in gangs when you're in Chicago, specifically in my area as well, you know. It's almost like you're not doing nothing bad. It's almost like that's what you're supposed to do. Because it's almost like depending on what side you're on dictates what you will be.
Alex joined the Cobras too, at age 13. Stephen says they've both been having run-ins with the cops ever since.
I mean, when we were young, the things the police used to do to us was just crazy. Like, they'll drop us off in different gang neighborhoods, they'll mace us, they'll beat us up, pin drugs on us, and they'll lie and say we did things that we didn't do. I mean, we grew up fighting that all our lives.
Alex was arrested dozens of times over the years for everything from possession of marijuana to robbery. But those charges never stuck, which, as Stephen sees it, made him even more of a target.
Like, my brother was a well-known guy, and he's been around in this area a long time. You know, and he's a charmer. He's got the girls, you know, he's always dressed nice. He's got a car, you know. My brother, he's just well-known, well-known. And the police hated him all his life. That police department, 25th District, couldn't stand us.
Listen, there's something I need to tell you up front. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the story I'm telling you, not directly. But I don't want to paint a false picture of Alex as some kind of angel. Like his brother says, he wasn't. Case in point, Alex did get one conviction. And it's a serious one. He killed someone in a hit and run 11 months after Officer Lewis's murder. And I have to say, part of me wishes I could tell you a neater story of a man who does no wrong, accused of a crime he says he didn't commit. That's the movie narrative. The Shawshank Redemption. The Fugitive. We want nice, bright lines between offenders and victims. But the reality is so much messier. Most people who commit crimes are also the victims of crimes. It's a finding that holds true across the globe. Point being, when Alex went hunting for a lawyer to handle his appeal, he had two strikes against him. The first was the hit and run, but the bigger problem was that he had now been convicted of murdering a cop. Thanks to her job in probation, Marisol knew about law clinics that specialized in representing the wrongfully convicted. She says she contacted all of them, and she says they all turned her away.
And it was like, what? This is what you specialize. This is what you do. Why wouldn't you want this, you know?
So did at least 10 private defense lawyers, Melissa says.
The moment, you know, you even mention, okay, this is a murder, but this is not just a murder. It is a murder of a police officer. It almost felt like we were being judged without even getting to know us or just the whole situation.
For a year, the sisters got nowhere. The moment they mentioned their brother's name, the Spanish Cobras, the murder of a police officer, it was like they could see the gate come down right before their eyes. And the courts wouldn't wait forever for Alex to find a new lawyer. They felt like they were running out of time.
We were like out of money almost. We kind of exhausted our options at that point.
They paid Alex's first lawyer a lot of money, but they both felt like he never cared enough about their brother's defense. During the trial, he called only one witness to the stand. The sisters tracked down a second attorney for Alex's appeal, but they felt like he was worse than their original lawyer. In one embarrassing incident, he got Alex's name wrong and referred to him as Miguel.
Like, the prosecutors would even laugh at court as he was presenting his defense and all of that. They were not at all shook or anything by him.
The first one failed us. The second one was just absolutely lousy.
There were times we felt sick physically, like
exhausted.
Yeah, and we still pushed ourselves or we pushed each other. Or like, it was a big, big roller coaster ride.
Then, in February 2020, Alex called them with an idea. The window to argue for a new trial was closing. In jail, he'd read some legal filings in another Chicago case. They were thorough, well-argued, and all of the names seemed to be correct. And he thought, now, this is the kind of attorney I need. That attorney's name was Jennifer Blagg.